All right, finally, we've had to sit here and watch this horrible Mets season. And I haven't had a chance to talk about it on the pod yet with my very good friend Sal Licata, Sal Licata Show on YouTube, and of course, the host of the nightly BNNY on SNY, to which I am a contributor. The music just really cuts out like that. I haven't figured out how to fade it. Sal, how you doing?
I love it because we both come from the world of radio where everything was done for us and you could play music with no restrictions and any of that nonsense. And now it's like, geez, how am I going to find 8 seconds of a song that's legally allowed to be played on podcast and everything, fading it out? Who the hell knows? I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Maggie.
All right. Who's the biggest culprit in this Mets failed season? And I know it's not an easy question, but if you were going to point the finger at one person or one entity, what is it?
It's a great question. It has to be David Stearns because he's the one who put it together. So I could give you a million reasons of why it hasn't worked. And for the record, now I wasn't alone with this, and I don't care. Like, I've taken plenty of losses before. I thought it was going to work out. I also wasn't alone. The experts, if you will, the pundits, thinking the Mets were going to win the division. Like, did anybody think Freddie Peralta was going to be a disaster? So it's not just the move. A lot of people didn't like letting go of Alonso or trading Nimmo. It's not just that. But at the end of the day, David Stearns is the one who saw what happened in 2025. He's the one who took a blowtorch to it. Well, like partial blowtorch to it. And then he's the one who put together the team. Steve Cohen let him do what he wanted to do. He's the one who did it. So even though I like some of the moves, not being deep enough, like letting Alonso go is one thing. Replacing him with Polanco and then Vientos and Beatty as the fullback, unacceptable. The pitching, even though I thought it would be better, still a little thin. Like when you actually look at it, even after the offseason, it's like, wow, okay, Bo Bichette, good, but like look at everything else. So I would say if I had to pick one, I don't even know how you go opposite of David Stearns.
I mean, I think there's a way that he might be in the running as of now of being one of the worst GMs in the history of the city. And I know that's weird because they made it to an NLCS. So like, you can't say he's as bad as some of the Jets GMs that have come through town, or even some of the Knicks GMs when they were a revolving door. But I mean, just considering he's got a blank check, the team waited for his contract to end. I think there's a chance because of all the resources that he has that he goes down as one of the worst. If let's just say, you know, he's here for two more years, they don't win a World Series or even come close. And then he has to, you know, kind of sneak out of town, tail between legs.
I need to see it, though, play out. And even 2024, like that wasn't his team, really.
That's true.
I feel like it's fair. Like, how do you properly evaluate a general manager in just a year or 2 years? It takes, like, especially with the Mets, it's a massive undertaking from the farm system up. And then so they have the success in 2024, which in hindsight was probably the worst thing possible, because I guarantee you David Stearns didn't like that group, but he was evaluating it. They stunk the majority of the year. Then they go on a run. They keep the team together. They get to the NLCS. And now he's got to double down on a team he probably didn't believe in to begin with a bunch of players that weren't his in 2025, and now they've been in the tailspin ever since. So I know this sounds crazy, and I understand Mets fans want David Stearns fired. I don't think that there is a better guy right now that's out there. It would just be starting over with the same type of guy. Oh, look at this young president from Tampa or whatever. Like, David Stearns was in Milwaukee the best hire you could make, and it's been a disaster through 3 years. I need to see it play out. As of now, the results, you're right, Maggie. He's been the architect of two of the most disappointing seasons in the history of the Mets franchise. Think about the magnitude of that statement.
It's huge. And by the way, like, no credit for the Juan Soto signing, because that was the Cohen checkbook. Like, Juan was definitely going to the highest bidder, it looks like. And I think that was, you know, the relationship between him and ownership. And listen, the funny part too is Milwaukee continues to win. So I'm kind of wondering, like, either he set this amazing foundation or there are other people who are able to take the torch from him and continue to have success, which is the Mets can never find any kind of consistency. The thoughts on trading Lindor, you and I disagreed on this pretty vehemently on the show on Friday on BNNY. You think it's okay to listen. I think they could have avoided a PR nightmare, which this has turned into. Nightmares may be a little strong. This is definitely, like the Mets kind of tend to do, a one-day story that turned into a three-month story. If they had just put him on the do not trade list that they put out, they could have avoided a lot of BS. And it brings up those same issues of whether or not Lindor can get along with people, which is the last thing that you want from him while he's going through this funk of a season. Why do you think it's a good idea to put him on the trade block?
Okay. I think that this is a great conversation, and there are many layers to it. I am of the belief that when you fail as badly as the Mets have failed, like, anybody should be up for grabs. And the only people on that list are people that you would never consider trading. It's not like, well, we like these guys better. No, like, you're never going to trade the young guys because that's what you value, the young, cheap guys with potential. And Juan Soto's, he's Juan Soto. Like, even if you said you were going to, he's here for 15 years. Like, nobody could afford to take on the contract, which is why you were the ones who ended up with him. So I don't think it was a knock on Lindor. Where I will agree with you is that, now remember too, this wasn't leaked from the Mets. This report from our colleague Chelsea Janes had rival executives telling her that the Mets told them they were open for business and everybody but these players are available. Then that gets leaked and it's painted as the picture of the Mets are looking to actively move Lindor, which is not accurate. So I don't have any personal issues with Lindor. I would have traded him before this past season, in the offseason, just because of, I heard about the dynamics in that clubhouse, which I don't even want to get into because people are so freaking sensitive to it. It's disgusting. But anyway, I heard about some of that. Plus, he's a declining player who's expensive that had good value. Like, he's still very good. Look at that. Right now, tell me the shortstop you take over Francisco Lindor. But with all that being said, where I do agree with you is that the Mets probably could have done a better job in protecting that he was available instead of hanging him out to dry. I don't have an issue with making him available, but putting it out, like, that should be a trade when you hear about it, when it happens. Not we're dangling Lindor. It's holy crap, they traded Lindor. Not he's available, come get him.
Yeah, this had to have a little more Luka Doncic than a little more like, hey, this is going to be a story through right. A lockout, through whatever is going to happen. Like, this is going to be a story for a long, long time. Just curious, like, what do you think a relationship between Lindor and Soto? What do you think is the real dynamic? Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad or good do you think it is?
I do not think Francisco Lindor is a bad person. But I also believe that there have been... Okay, here's what I could go based off of. And this is where Lindor lost me. Now, I loved him as a player in 2024. Had a chance to interview him. And the first, and I may have told you the story, I may not have, but for your listeners here, I'll just rehash the story quickly. First question I asked him, and it wasn't even a question, it was more like putting him in a spot where he can succeed with the answer to this question and endear him to the sports fan who's listening to the show. You were as down as it could be. The thumbs down thing, the booze, the bad relationship. It was as bad as it could get when you first got here. The pressure in New York, weren't playing well. And then, and this was after the 2024 season, ahead of 2025 when I interviewed him. And then it was as good as it could possibly be. My girl, everybody sing, gives me goosebumps thinking about it. Big home run. How does that feel to go from where you were at to where you're at currently? And he responded by saying, I don't think it was ever bad. Mm. And I'm like, bro, like, can we curse on this?
Sure.
Like, you're full of shit. You're so full of shit. And to a point where I push back on it, like, no, this is not a negative thing. This is not loud radio, negative talk guy. This is like acknowledging the reality of the situation. And he wouldn't do it. And that lost me. And I believe that type, I don't think he's a bad person. You know how A-Rod had some of that like phoniness with him for years. And even now to this day, like, he's come a long way, but I still think he's got that. And I think that could rub people the wrong way, especially somebody as blunt and honest as Juan Soto. So the McNeil stuff, whatever, that was a problem back then. I would have moved McNeil then is what I said, not Lindor. The Soto thing, I think, is different where I feel like Lindor, it was his team. Soto comes in making the big money. Now it's not his team. Then the battle for the captaincy, Cohen coming out and saying, I think there's a lot of reasons why we're at where we're at with him. But I think ultimately it's just him not acknowledging the reality sometimes of certain situations and people who are real not connecting with that.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, Lindor is extremely polished, always has been, even going back to the Cleveland days. Mm-hmm. He used to come to SI and just hang and do interviews. And he was always just, like perfect in his answers. See, this is what brings me to the next bit of news that came out this week. Obviously, you got the Cooperstown this weekend. You get the Hall of Fame. Carlos Beltran is going in as a Met. And he said that, yes, there were conversations about him taking over when Carlos Mendoza was fired. And everyone, he technically already was a Mets manager. If we want to go technical, he was hired and then he was fired because of the sign stealing scandal, which, by the way, little aside here, did not take a lot of accountability for that scandal in the last media session. He's like, why was I the only player named and everyone was doing it? You know, kind of that thing. Anyway, that's just a little aside. You know, because I think the personality conflicts is not a non-story here with the Mets, I actually think Beltran would be a great choice. You know, we have no idea with these former superstars and players whether they're going to be good or not as coaches and managers. You don't know. I don't know. Some are great. Some are awful. We'll all find out together. But with personality stuff, it's possible that I think someone who was as famous as Beltran, literally walking into the Hall of Fame, maybe his voice settles some of that personality conflict in the clubhouse.
I agree. And I hated what they did to Carlos Mendoza. I just believe Mendy is a good manager. Like, I understand that's what happens. Your team loses, you're going to get fired. It got to a point where they couldn't keep him. But I believe he's an asset to wherever he goes. So I hated that that had to happen. I think they put him in a position to fail with the way that they did the coaching staff and all that stuff. However, the when you have a player of the magnitude of Carlos Beltran, immediately the floor is you're going to garner the respect of all the... You have to. He's a Hall of Famer. Literally, a Hall of Famer. By the way, Juan, you've been here. Like, I'm a Hall of Famer. I am. You might be one day, but I am. Lindor, same thing. Like, so not only that, which is a huge thing, also the intelligence we've heard for how many years, Beltran, an incredibly smart guy, dating back to when he was with the Yankees, whether as a player or even in their front office. He wants to be a manager, familiar with New York. Maybe the timing is right for it. Also, Maggie, like, as long as David Stearns is here, and most organizations feel like this too with the data and all that stuff, the analytics, they're never hiring Alex Cora. Oh, and by the way, the great Alex Cora, he leaves the Red Sox or they fire him. They've won 14. So, like, so it's not like, oh, what are you going to do without the great manager? They now want somebody who's going to be, not that they can control, but collaborative. Who better to collaborate than Carlos Beltran, who has the respect of the players because he did it at the highest level, an intelligent player at that, sees the game in a different way, can be a successful manager, and has that experience in the front office and can work together with the front office. So I'm not, like, I really don't think the managers are as relevant anymore at all, to a point where I'm just deflated. I wanted Buck Showalter for years. I thought Mendy was the right guy after the fact. I don't really care anymore. I think Carlos Beltran is too perfect a fit for this Mets situation.
The only way it goes wrong is if Beltran already has a side. Like, if he's already shown a favoritism towards either Lindor or Soto, which kind of feels like that's the two kind of lanes. If he's like a Soto guy, air quotes, then that might be even a further complication with Lindor or vice versa. But again, I think he would probably be a little more savvy than that. And I would think that he would be able to bring everybody together. How about this for a Mets story? That teams are using AI to help manage the game.
I did not even see this. No. I saw that, like, MLB's trying to crack down on the iPad use and all that stuff. That's because of AI use?
Yeah, the iPad stuff, totally. There was a story that there are certain teams who are using AI, like, during the game to try to help with, like, what pitch should we throw here? Or what is the situation? What should we do here? And using AI. And apparently, the Mets were one of the teams that had, like, this $100,000. I think Adam Ottavino was the one who said this on his podcast, that he had heard about it. They spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to get this artificial intelligence, and, like, look what they have to show for it. I honestly get so depressed sometimes when I think about AI, but then I'm like, well, maybe there's actually room for the humans, because AI could not help this team. In fact, maybe it made it worse. Like, you don't know.
I got to look up that story. Did they say when this was happening? Like, this was a this year thing?
Yeah.
Post Mendoza or during Mendoza?
The whole season.
Okay. What I would say is, and I'll look more into this story, I apologize for not knowing, I have an issue. Like, Freddie Peralta, who's been at the very least good his entire career, comes to the Mets, and his ERA is one of the worst in baseball. Like, at some point, you got to say, maybe they or he is in Peralta or the players that come here, maybe they're not the problem. Bo Bichette, great, comes here, not great. Peralta, very good to great, comes here, terrible. Maybe they are, in fact, the problem. And I do think, because I've heard some of this before about, Will Salmon reported this. I don't know if he did it on the show that we were on, but talking about how Peralta started to call his own pitches a couple of starts ago and he was actually good. And I'm like, well, why would he not be throwing pitches he feels comfortable with? What's going on here? Well, maybe AI is calling pitches, which is a problem. So if that is happening, that is appalling on many, many different levels.
Yeah. ChatGPT, man. Who needs a manager?
What should I throw here?
Okay, while I have you here, and thanks again for doing this, mm-hmm. I got two more for you. One, a Yankees question, because now Judge, you know, you and I were on the show the day that we got the update that he still has not resumed baseball activities. What I said at the time was, listen, he's not dead. They didn't say that he's shut down for the season, so the Yankees should obviously be adding at the deadline. But man, it got me thinking about Judge, because he's got everything. He's got the numbers. He's got the stature. He's got the captaincy. He's got it all, except for the World Series ring. And, you know, he's getting older. We don't know what this season is going to hold. The AL kind of stinks. But if he's going to be hurt or not 100%, you know, this could just be another lost season. Where's Judge right now? And do you think his legacy will be hurt if he does not win? Because, again, Sal, I think being in an era with Ohtani, where Ohtani is obviously the best player, and he's winning, I think that hurts Judge.
Yeah, but Ohtani's also put in a better position to succeed. I want to see the Yankees, like, for once, go for it. Not like halfway it, or, yeah, we do this deal, but we don't want to give up that much. Or, yeah, we like this player, but we're not going to spend that much. I would have gone all in. Now, I'm just all in general. Like, that's what my operation. It might have not worked, but at least I would have gone down trying. And they're kind of like, now, they have sustained success, but I want to go over the top. And the Dodgers clearly go over the top on top of going over the top. So I think Ohtani's been put in a better position to succeed than Judge. I think Aaron Judge, the best baseball player that I've seen outside of Barry Bonds, at the very least since Barry Bonds, and I'm not even talking like pre-roided out Barry Bonds. That's how much I value Aaron Judge. However, he will be judged on whether he wins a ring or not. He's a big-bodied guy, as you know. He's only getting older. I want to believe he's coming back. It makes it a lot more fun for what we do, talking sports and seeing Aaron Judge in the biggest stage, certainly in New York, seeing if the Yankees could go chase their first World Series win since 2009. I don't know if he's coming back at all. They still don't have a timeline. We don't even know. We know what the injury is. There's not a timeline of, yeah, he'll be out 6 to 8 weeks and then begin his rehab or whatever. We don't even know that yet. The season's winding down. So the longer this goes, the older he gets, the more likely it's going to become. The reality is he's going to go the way of Don Mattingly as opposed to Derek Jeter. And that's just going to be his legacy. It's not a horrible thing, but in New York, look at Jalen Brunson, look at Patrick Ewing. Like, if you don't win the ring, you can't be at that sports, I call him sports god type level.
Man, how much cover are the Knicks giving all these teams right now? So much, which is not a sentence I'm used to saying. Okay, seriously, last one here. Yeah. Let's go to a little football for a second. Real kind of knucklehead summer for a lot of players in this area. Geno Smith, one bad headline after another, but nobody's expecting anything from the Jets. I thought Jackson Dart and Cam Scataboo, thank God this offseason is not an IQ test, because they would be going downward. I mean, Jackson Dart posting a video of himself jumping off of a yacht, like, do it, don't post it, you dummy. Cam Scataboo doing the backflip on the stage at Fanatics Fest on the injured ankle, or the healed mm-hmm. ankle, I guess. And of course he bites it, and then has to pop back up, and he looks like an idiot. How much of an impact do you think John Harbaugh is really going to have?
Well, I think that's going to be a big test with those two guys in particular. I was saying this earlier. I feel like, first of all, I'm a big believer in excellent head coaches. Like, I know some people would care more about the quarterback or the talent. I would always side with Belichick over Brady. I'm a big believer in having the proven commodity as a head coach. So the Giants couldn't have done any better. And matter of fact, I didn't think Harbaugh would want them. Turns out he does. He loves New York football Giants and his father and all the history. So good for the Giants being able to land the biggest fish. Now he's got some work to do because they have some talent, but they're very immature. They've been undisciplined for years. And just look at those two players that you mentioned. Scataboo, like, it's one thing for Scataboo to be reckless on the football field because that's what you want. That's the type of player he is. You don't want to take that away from him. Otherwise, you just have an average like running back. Like you want him to be that ferocious running back. Reckless off the field has been his issue. And he does some stupid stuff too on Twitch or whatever it is that he's doing. He doesn't seem to be all there. He's got to corral that. More importantly, Jackson Dart and being reckless on the field. That's the issue. And how many times have we heard Jackson Dart speak about it? Well, I'm going to be me. I don't want to take, if I need to get a yard, I'm going to still go. No. You're not, you don't understand. So Harbaugh has to get it through their thick heads, specifically Dart, what he needs from him, because being a hero trying to get the extra yard and getting concussed and being out half the season is not going to help anybody. So I think he's got a challenge in front of him. Not to mention that by all accounts, it sounds like the Cowboys are going to be a very good football team. I know the offense at least going to be good. Eagles, even without A.J. Brown, still the Eagles. Who knows about the Commanders taking the next step? The NFC overall is tough. So I don't look at the Giants as a playoff team right out of the gate, but I want to see how Harbaugh can manage these guys, in particular Jackson Dart, get him to be more mature. Jackson Dart, Maggie, acts like he's a superstar. He hasn't done anything yet. He's acting like he's some superstar.
The two headlines we get from Jackson Dart this offseason, jumping off of a yacht and posting it on social, and a political rally.
It's I forgot about that.
Right. You know, like, I'm not seeing that from Cam Ward. I'm not seeing that from Travis Hunter. I'm not seeing that from Abdul Carter. These guys in the same draft class who were drafted ahead of you. Hell, I don't see that from Shedeur Sanders. You know, yeah. That's crazy to me. And the biggest point is the Giants have to get themselves out of the basement. I mean, they become like a joke of a franchise, which is so sad to say. I mean, they'll always be a legacy franchise, but outside of one playoff run with Brian Daboll, it has just been sad. Sal, thanks so much for doing this. Yeah, go ahead.
I do think that bare minimum, it may not result in wins right away. He will clean that crap up and have the foundation being built and lay the floor. Like they at the very least will be a respectable organization again. That's what I believe here. And if the guys don't want to do it, he'll just get rid of them.
We can only hope. So we don't have to watch two bad football teams in this town. Sal, thank you so much. I will see you Friday on BNNY. And I have a pretty good track record here. A lot of days I'm in, news tends to break. So,
well, maybe a big trade you're hinting at.
I was there on the Bichette day. I was there last Friday when Chelsea had the big scoop.
Were you there when Mendy got fired that Friday?
I was there when Mendy got fired.
I'll brace myself for news Friday.
Sal, thank you.
Thank you, Maggie.